My name is Clancy Imflin, and I'm an alcoholic. It would be fitting for me to start without saying something in extreme bad taste to offend half the people here. I noticed a charming young lady on my left who is doing the interpretation for the hard of hearing. And we, a few years ago, we were a little detached from the mainstream out in California. We tried that same thing, and it didn't work very well. But as my friend Clint H. and others know, we didn't do it quite the same way. The speaker would get up and say, "My name is Fred, and I'm an alcoholic." And we just had a man next to him saying, "My name is Fred, and I'm an alcoholic." I had to say that just as the general manager of AA World Services strode in. I think this is an excellent subject. The first two speakers didn't quite use up all their time, I'm sorry to say, and so we probably will get, if we get through early, there'll be time for questions. There's also a possibility there won't be any line at the coffee bar downstairs, but I don't think so. My voice is a little gone because my friend Kevin Jay from Washington, New York, asked me to help him a little bit in the flag rehearsals yesterday. And unfortunately, he's a wonderful director, but he doesn't deal well with West Coast alcoholics who provided these guides. And he was saying to them nicely, "I think it would be a good idea. Maybe if you would walk over here and then cross. What do you think of that idea?" And they, I said, "No, Kevin, that's not the way they've been trained." "You! Out of there!" "Oh, yeah." And then late in the afternoon, the flag bearers themselves showed up, and they were a recalcitrant bunch. And there's one guy, he just made me crazy. I kept telling him again and again, and I finally just gave him about 5 minutes ration of strong direction. I said, "Look, take the flag and dip it twice, then step back, and then just stand there. Can't you understand that?" And I gave him 5 minutes. And he turned to me with a big smile and said, "I'm going to get you under." So, my voice is just about gone. But I'm very happy and privileged to be... Shut up. I have been very pleased to hear our first two participants. They're both very nice people, and I enjoyed what they said. And they deal very well with sponsorship. I think I've been thrown in here as some hope to those who do not respond to any known love that is available. In Los Angeles, it's a rather common threat. If you don't shape up, we're going to send you to Clancy. That catches them. But because I was a long-term slipper. I was a long-term slipper, and after many years of slipping, I had developed a rather devious and sly and nasty, cynical response to people who had shown affection or unjudgmental love for me. And in looking back now, I think I understand that in a sense. And it's something to think about when you deal with people like this. And that is this, and this is not a joke, this is actually correct, that when you are out of self-worth, people who like you, you like them, but you don't respect them because they're too easily fooled. And the people who treat you as down deep, your own Puritan ethics says you should be treated, you hate them, but you respect them. And it has always been my feeling. That is why I could never have had a friend to be my sponsor, because I would not turn to a friend in time of sponsorship, because I could get whatever answer I needed. Somewhere inside of me, whatever spark of life was left told me that I needed something different, but I didn't want it. But somewhere there was an instinctive thing that needed it. And I went through a number of sponsors. And I've said this several times, and I believe it. And it may be a small percentage of alcoholics, but alcoholics who have become so caught up in their own rationale that they've just lost any response to reason. And that is the idea that if I would have found two more people to love me and hold me, I would be dead. I needed to find someone who just did not put up with my crap. And I used to lie awake at night and hate that guy and think of ways to kill him. And again, I've said this many times, but it's certainly true. At one time, a day I got fired as a dishwasher after 6 months of sobriety, and he cursed me. To talk to me was the first man I ever believed had felt the way I felt. And that was the great turning spot in his life. And the next guy they got, this Bill from Kentucky, who resented their intrusions upon his solitary drunken splendor in that hospital. And on. And it's one alcoholic talking to another. That is what makes Alcoholics Anonymous different from all therapies everywhere. Now, there are a number of people who have, and it's interesting too, Dr. Bob's last talk, the last talk he gave at the first of these international conventions in 1950, he said several things that we still remember, such as, keep it simple, let's not rouse our program up with all sorts of Freudian complexes. Secondly, he mentioned that number one thing that we all talk about. All in the bottom analysis, all there is here is love and service. And he didn't even have to define them. He says we all know what love is, and we all know what service is. And the other point he made was, let us never become too busy to stop and turn back and give a helping hand to those behind us, because none of us would be here today if someone hadn't done it for us. Which is certainly the emblem of the sponsorship concept. Techniques of sponsorship vary. Methodology of sponsorship varies, but nothing varies in the basic premise that when you go out there and give some guy or girl your best shot, you are upholding the number one spiritual principle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe. Just mouthing pretty phrases and telling people the answer to your problem is on page 149. If that's all there was to it, we'd all be home free. But what we are sharing is ourselves. We are sharing our feelings. I was a product of strong, strong sponsorship. Almost beyond strong, almost to contemptuous, is a better word. And in fact, I found out later, this guy did not like me. Hard to believe. But he would give me things to do just to keep me out of his way a lot of times. And as one of our speakers said, you get into that little bit of peer jealousy. He had other people he sponsored. One of them that did me some good, he was one of the dead-end kids in the movie. And I used to look at him and think, if I was a star, he'd be nicer to me, I'll bet. Well, but he would, he gave me specific instructions. I mentioned this the other night at a meeting here, but, to me, when you're a cynic and a boob, sponsorship, I always look for I never believed in AA because I'd been in AA in and out for 9 years. I believed in important things. I believed in
searching for truth. At one time, I was, to the best of my knowledge, I don't offend any of you people from the Lone Star State, but at one time, to the best of my knowledge, when I was on the faculty of the University of Texas directing a grand opera, and I was deeply into searching for the inner self, I became one of six people that I know of in the state of Texas who knew truth. Unfortunately, the next autumn, I was directing the Christmas pageant at the Texas State Insane Asylum. Yeah. The moral I drew from that is, in Texas, they don't respect truth, that's all. But I knew that my problems were much deeper than those who came to AA for a drinking problem. I was here a long time before I discovered what we all suffered from was not drinking, but alcoholism, which manifests itself in extremely conflict-prone sobriety, as well as the surge that comes from drinking. So, most of us have come here feeling different. Most of us have, I suppose, if there's any unifying factor that every alcoholic that I've ever known has, is they come here feeling different, and the door is locked from the inside. It is not locked from the outside. If pretty words could get that door open, we'd all have people. But somehow you have to reassure that boob, frightened boob, living in a wall of defiance, to somehow release the lock on his side of the door and open the door a little bit. And, yes? Yeah. And some of us have our doors bolted as though we were living in a New York condo. 9 bolts, 2 locks, and a chain, and a window. And so my sponsor, it didn't make any difference why he had me do the things, because as it turned out, I did them and got better. He had me take AA action. He had me go to meetings. He had me say no to AA requests. He superimposed his judgment over mine. Now, there's a question of whether or not we should do that in AA, and I think, if possible, you should not do it. But there are places where you knew it. And the reason you have to do it is if the guy knew what to do, he wouldn't be in that position. Sit up. Yeah. There are people who seem to respond well to love, but there are people who do not. They need physical direction. We should all have our own gas station somewhere. What impressed me about that story is not the fact that he went to the gas station, but when he didn't show up, the guy came and found him. Get him. Hey, son of a bitch, you missed your call. Now, that's what I call love. But I had a great value there because I did the things my sponsor said. I tried to stay out of his way so he wouldn't think of too many things. But he always would say things to me like, I'm used to having a sponsor who loves me and call him late at night and say I'm drunk, for example. Because I always had sponsors in various cities, and the kind of sponsor I was looking for, and I found him a lot, would say things like, you're not sick. I mean, you're not drunk, you're sick. You've had a relapse, that's all. And I'm coming over and I'll get a couple of the guys and we'll sit with you till morning and we'll get you through this. And if you need some money, let us know and we want you to make it. Now, that's what I always called sponsorship. And I got this boob who'd say things like, Ted, call me anytime you want, a day or night. If it's late at night, it better be awfully important. Call me anytime you want to, up till the time you take a drink. Once you take a drink, don't call. Because all you're going to hear on my end of the line is a click and a dial tone. Now, that this guy don't know much about AA, I'll tell you that. I've been around longer than he has. And he would tell me to do things, and I would do them.
And which may not be the right way for most people, and I would never defend it. But I know this. When you have strong sponsorship, now I have the opportunity that most people don't have, and a lot of people have it, but a lot of people don't, to travel around the country, to travel in Canada and Mexico and on all but two of the states to talk at AA meetings. And I see AA all over. And every time I go to an AA town, if I can, I go to one of the local meetings and just sit there with a 50-50 thought. I hope they don't recognize me. I hope they do. So far, it's been on the wrong side a lot. I'll tell you that. But I have noticed in the United States and Canada, I'm sure that anyone who gets around has noticed this. There are pockets of enthusiasm in AA. There are areas of enthusiasm followed by deserts of rather passive gray areas, then another pocket of enthusiasm. And that's true. I'll tell you, there's no question about that. Anyone who travels understands that. And I'll tell you something else that I believe because I've seen this, and it may not be correct, but my opinion. Wherever there is a pocket of enthusiasm, there is a strong sponsorship ethic. There are a lot of meetings where there's a lot of noise that masks for enthusiasm and excitement. And when you go back to a year later, and it's an entirely new group manifesting enthusiasm and excitement, you feel something is not structured quite right. I believe that strong sponsorship, at least for people like me, not for most people in A, but for people like me, gave me a way to go. It gave me action. It was the epitome of, again, what I've always believed, since I've been sober a while, to understand. The difference between AA and all therapies everywhere, and all therapies in the history of mankind have said this. We were talking about it before the meeting. For some, talk to somebody. Nearly every therapy says to disturbed and lost people, come to us, we will change your thinking, and eventually your actions will change. AA, through luck, celestial intervention, whatever it might be, stumbled upon the greatest gift you and I'll ever have. We say, you come to us, we will change your actions, and eventually your thinking will change. Which is why I believe that they say in our book, love is not the magic word. Even spirituality is not the magic word, although these things become essential. Action is the magic word. And action seems to work when all else fails. What it says in our book, it doesn't say when all else fails, go into a meditative coma. In our book, it doesn't say give yourself one last hour in front of the mirror looking at the only one you've ever loved. It says when all else fails, work with another alcoholic. The greatest gift that anyone you will ever work with will do for you. It's nice if they get a cake. And you can give them a cake and say, yes, I saved that man myself. There's a certain joie de vivre for our French friend. But the greatest gift is this. When I am listening to their crap, I'm not thinking about my crap. The function of sponsorship, I have again, in pursuant, I think we are in agreement here, when people are sober a while, I don't think you can hang on to them. And I think that one of the hardest lessons I've had to learn over the years is releasing people little by little. Because, you know, every once in a while, a little group will find a Mr. Christian and charge the quarterdeck, and they're... I'm sick of being put over the side in a spiritual longboat. So you learn little different techniques. But I still believe in the same thing for new people, because the new people I work with are people who are lost. And so sometimes the more lost they are, the more apparently defiant they are. And you must realize this. Newcomers and slippers are not arrogant. They may look arrogant because that is their defense mechanism. But arrogant people are not in that school where you are debating which hurts least, the rope or the river. That is not a mark of arrogance. But what we're dealing with here are people who are afraid, and frightened people keep people at a distance so they won't find out they're afraid. And I did that. I was a master at that for years. That's the closed door. And you got to start with the realization. We find these defiant people, and we say, we're going to pull down your ego and make you humble or find some degree of humility. And it's an interesting thought, and it may not be correct, but it's what I believe, is that you don't tear them down to humility, you build them up to humility. As their self-worth increases, their defense mechanism comes down. And eventually what we consider to be getting nice is not getting down tonight, it's getting up tonight. So I can take away, but nobody can maintain it all the time, anybody. That's why we need each other on a continuing basis, I think. But to get that door open, and that's, I think, the same thing that Bill Wilson did in the Cyberling guest house in 1935, is what some of us, maybe I hope all of us, will be doing sometime in the next month. Sitting down with someone who is afraid and desperate, who knows their case is different, who knows there is no hope, and somehow, by sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and saying there is a way, and if you don't feel you can do it, I will show you how to do it. Primarily, I will show you by doing it myself. Secondarily, I will tell you, telling isn't half as well as doing for it. I know that I never act better than when I'm working with a new guy. I never act better. It's like when I'm teaching my kids to drive. I never drove that safe before or since. Yeah. We have to stop here, son. This says Boulevard Stop. Like, if he was in that car, I'd have been there by now. Yeah. And that's the way it is with new people. They come down to where I work, and we go across the street to eat. And better stop. The light is turning yellow. I wish, if he weren't here, I'd be done with two courses by now. Yeah. But one of the things it does for me is I act better, because I want to show them AA works. And I want to explain to them. And I want to do what I'm asking them to do. Now, you can't do everything you ask them to do, because you've done a lot of it, and you got other things to do as you get sober longer. But by God, you can show the flag, and you can be a present. I think that one thing that is difficult today, and I don't want to tromp on anybody's toes, because last night I made a vow. I'm never going to say another controversial thing in sobriety. But today, a lot of people construe a 12-step call is picking up someone and dumping them off at a treatment center and saying, good luck. That is not a 12-step call. That is a taxi. This in no way implies you shouldn't take people to treatment centers, but there's got to be a deeper connection between you eventually, sooner or later. Because the long-term basis is, I believe, I've never seen it to fail. I've had the opportunity in the past few years of sponsoring people who've been so bad that they had to come to me. And long-term slippers and, you know, I have a psychiatrist who is more than a body can bear. As soon as he gets straightened out, I'm going to ask him some advice, but not quite yet. And top-notch people who come down in their MGs and Skid Row, where I work, to say, what'll I do about this? And I said, I don't know. How do I get an MG, you know? But the function of the sponsor is to teach the guy to take the actions, not to keep them sober. I agree with no sponsor can keep anybody sober. But you can use all of your abilities to get them to take the actions that will keep them sober. Only these actions of AA that I know of will keep people sober. And if they're dying, I don't want to preside over their death. I would rather have them dislike me. I don't want to say, do them if you think they're right. I'd rather have them say, do it! One of the great experiences that comes to anybody who's been sponsoring for a number of years is when you see people who lie on the floor sick and can't move, and just 10 years later, they're on podiums around the country denouncing your cruelty. Yeah, that's... It does take a while to appreciate that, though. I want to use one little analogy, because I think it breaks it down into sponsors. I'll sit down. I got 3 minutes. All right. 3 o'clock? No. Some of these people have to get downstairs and order tape. But I've used this analogy a couple times, and I don't know any better way to explain what I construe to be sponsorship. And that is this. Today, there's a lot of questions. Why do old-timers say, why do these new people go to treatment centers? And people who've been responding to treatment centers, why don't these people understand the treatment centers are helping us? Why do they insist on not going to treatment centers? I think that one thing that is difficult today, and I don't want to tromp on anybody's toes because last night I made a vow. I'm never going to say another controversial thing in sobriety. But today, a lot of people construe a 12-step call is picking up someone and dumping them off at a treatment center and saying, good luck. That is not a 12-step call. That is a taxi. This in no way implies you shouldn't take people to treatment centers, but there's got to be a deeper connection between you eventually, sooner or later. Because the long-term basis is, I believe, I've never seen it to fail. I've had the opportunity in the past few years of sponsoring people who've been so bad that they had to come to me. And long-term slippers and, you know, I have a psychiatrist who is more than a body can bear. As soon as he gets straightened out, I'm going to ask him some advice, but not quite yet. And top-notch people who come down in their MGs and Skid Row, where I work, to say, what'll I do about this? And I said, I don't know. How do I get an MG, you know? But the function of the sponsor is to teach the guy to take the actions, not to keep them sober. I agree with no sponsor can keep anybody sober. But you can use all of your abilities to get them to take the actions that will keep them sober. Only these actions of AA that I know of will keep people sober. And if they're dying, I don't want to preside over their death. I would rather have them dislike me. I don't want to say, do them if you think they're right. I'd rather have them say, do it! One of the great experiences that comes to anybody who's been sponsoring for a number of years is when you see people who lie on the floor sick and can't move, and just 10 years later, they're on podiums around the country
denouncing your cruelty. Yeah. It does take a while to appreciate that, though.
I want to use one little analogy, because I think it breaks it down into sponsor dinner. I'll sit down. Well, I got 3 minutes. All right. 3 o'clock? No. Some of these people have to get downstairs and order tape. But I've used this analogy a couple times, and I don't know any better way to explain what I construe to be sponsorship. And that is this. Today, there's a lot of questions. Why do old-timers say, why do these new people go to treatment centers? And people who've been responding to treatment centers, why don't these people understand that treatment centers are helping us? Why do they insist on not going to treatment centers? I got sober in the 1950s when there was only one treatment center in Los Angeles. That was called Shire's Dryer. And their cures sometimes lasted till the corner, you know. And so I came from a school of those. You don't go to one of them drunk hospitals. You do it as a man, you hear me? I've always, like old folks who get like me, I was against them for years. But over the years, I've watched various treatment centers who seem to be following what I think they should be following, or what appear to be teaching them AA there, not mumbo jumbo. And they are wonderful treatment centers. There are also treatment centers who are lethal, I think, who still advertise on television and the radio that they can cure alcoholism in 30 days. And not alcoholics of my sort, they're not going to cure in 30 days. Maybe alcoholics of your sort. But, and the analogy I think about, it's like a guy going, why would a young guy or anybody go down and say, go to a treatment center? It's like going down to the beach in Santa Monica, and somewhere over the horizon is Catalina Island. And here's a lovely little small skiff, and it has men in white suits and pleasant smells wafting out of the galley. And a man saying, this is the SS treatment center. Come with us, we're heading toward Catalina. And down the beach there's some goof. Oh, don't worry about that. I'm from AA. You want to ride my invisible boat? If you got insurance, you go on the yacht. I'll tell you that. Now, they do exactly what they say. They get you well. They feed you. They tell you what has to be done. But unfortunately, any treatment center sooner or later has to say, well, this is as far as we go. We have to turn back and get another load. Yes. What do I do now? Swim like a sumbitch, baby. Yeah. Now. And you're out there swimming, and here comes this guy buying his invisible boat. He says, you want a ride? Yeah, I'll get a ride. Then you get in the boat, and you realize there's no boat here. This is silly. This is craziness. And you dive back in and swim. I'd rather swim than, you know. And you drown again, and here he comes again and puts you in the boat. What do you want me to do? Just row. Row what? $3.96 South Los Angeles Street. I'll be there Monday. And they want you to row, but there's no boat, there's no oar. Do it in the old-timers meeting. I want to just get this done, and I'll sit down. But finally, you get so sick, and here comes this guy again. He says, get in the boat. There's no boat. What do you want me to do? Row. There's no oar. But I got no choice. You pick up an invisible oar, and you row. And as you row, the boat appears. But it doesn't. Oh, come on. But it doesn't appear until you begin to row. That is the function of a sponsor, to get you to row a boat you can't see with an oar you don't believe in, and as you do it, the boat appears and you get where you're going.
glad to be here this afternoon. One of the greatest honors anyone can be given is to be given a chance to participate at such a convention as this. I am deeply touched by it, but I hope when we leave here, we will not go home and think about all the folks we saw, but also, in addition to that, perhaps we can remember, somewhere out there, there's a guy who is swimming and he got no place to go. You got to tell him about your boat. You got to get him into it. Give him an oar and say, row! Thank you.
To me, was the first man I ever believed had felt the way I felt. And that was the great turning spot in his life. And the next guy they got, this Bill from Kentucky, who resented their intrusions upon his solitary drunken splendor in that hospital. And on and on. And it's one alcoholic talking to another. That is what makes Alcoholics Anonymous different from all therapies everywhere. Now, there are a number of people who have, and it's interesting, too, Dr. Bob's last talk, the last talk he gave at the first of these international conventions in 1950, he said several things that we still remember, such as, keep it simple, let's not louse our program up with all sorts of Freudian complexes. Secondly, he mentioned that number one thing that we all talk about. All in the bottom analysis, all there is here is love and service. And he didn't even have to define them. He says, we all know what love is, and we all know what service is. And the other point he made was, let us never become too busy to stop and turn back and give a helping hand to those behind us, because none of us would be here today if someone hadn't done it for us. Which is certainly the emblem of the sponsorship concept. Techniques of sponsorship vary. Methodology of sponsorship varies, but nothing varies in the basic premise that when you go out there and give some guy or girl your best shot, you are upholding the number one spiritual principle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe. Just mouthing pretty phrases and telling people the answer to your problem is on page 149. If that's all there was to it, we'd all be home free. But what we are sharing is ourselves. We are sharing our feelings. I was a product of strong sponsorship. Almost beyond strong, almost to contemptuous is a better word. And in fact, I found out later, this guy did not like me. Hard to believe. But he would give me things to do just to keep me out of his way a lot of times. And as one of our speakers said, you get into that little bit of peer jealousy. He had other people he sponsored. One of them that did me some good, he was one of the dead-end kids in the movies. And I used to look at him and think, if I was a star, he'd be nicer to me, I'll bet. But he would, he gave me specific instructions. I mentioned this the other night at a meeting here, but, you know, to me, when you're a cynic and a boob, sponsorship, I always look for I never believed in AA because I'd been in AA in and out for 9 years. I believed in important things. I believed in searching for truth. At one time, I was, to the best of my knowledge, I don't want to offend any of you people from the Lone Star State, but at one time, to the best of my knowledge, when I was on the faculty of the University of Texas directing the Grand Opera, and I was deeply into searching for the inner self, I became one of six people that I know of in the state of Texas who knew truth. Unfortunately, the next autumn I was directing the Christmas pageant at the Texas State Insane Asylum. Yeah. The moral I drew from that is, in Texas, they don't respect truth, that's all. But I knew that my problems were much deeper than those who came to AA for a drinking problem. I was here a long time before I discovered what we all suffered from was not drinking, but alcoholism, which manifests itself in extremely conflict-prone sobriety, as well as the surge that comes from drinking. So, most of us have come here feeling different. Most of us have, I suppose, if there's any unifying factor that every alcoholic that I've ever known has, is they come here feeling different, and the door is locked from the inside. It is not locked from the outside. If 30 words could get that door open, we'd all have people. But somehow you have to reassure that boob, frightened boob, living in a wall of defiance, to somehow release the lock on his side of the door and open the door a little bit. And, yes? Yeah. And some of us have our doors bolted as though we were living in a New York condo. 9 bolts, 2 locks, and a chain, and a window. So my sponsor, it didn't make any difference why he had me do the things, because as it turned out, I did them and got better. He had me take AA action. He had me go to meetings. He had me say no to AA requests. He superimposed his judgment over mine. Now, there's a question of whether or not we should do that in AA, and I think, if possible, you should not do it. But there are places where you knew it. And the reason you have to do it is if the guy knew what to do, he wouldn't be in that position. You know. Yeah. There are people who would respond well to love, but there are people who do not. They need physical direction. We should all have our own gas station somewhere. What impressed me about that story is not the fact that he went to the gas station, but when he didn't show up, the guy came and found him. You know, hey, son of a bitch, you missed your call. Now, that's what I call love. I had a great value there because I did the things my sponsor said. I tried to stay out of his way so he wouldn't think of too many things. But he always would say things to me like, I'm used to having a sponsor who loves me and call him late at night and say I'm drunk, for example. Because I always had sponsors in various cities, and the kind of sponsor I was looking for, and I found him a lot, would say things like, you're not sick. I mean, you're not drunk, you're sick. You've had a relapse, that's all. And I'm coming over and I'll get a couple of the guys and we'll sit with you till morning and we'll get you through this. And if you need some money, let us know and we want you to make it. Now, that's what I always call sponsorship. And I got this boob who'd say things like, kid, call me anytime you want, a day or night. If it's late at night, it better be awfully important. Call me anytime you want to, up till the time you take a drink. Once you take a drink, don't call, because all you're going to hear on my end of the line is a click and a dial tone. And I thought, this guy don't know much about AA, I'll tell you that. I've been around longer than he has. And he would tell me to do things, and I would do them. And which may not be the right way for most people, and I would never defend it. But I know this. When you have strong sponsorship, now I have the opportunity that most people don't have, and a lot of people have it, but a lot of people don't, to travel around the country, to travel in Canada and Mexico and on all but two of the states, to talk at AA meetings, and I see AA all over. And every time I go to an AA town, if I can, I go to one of the local meetings and just sit there with a 50-50 thought. I hope they don't recognize me. I hope they do.
So far, it's been on the wrong side a lot. I'll tell you that. But I have noticed in the United States and Canada, I'm sure that anyone who gets around has noticed this. There are pockets of enthusiasm in AA. There are areas of enthusiasm followed by deserts of rather passive gray areas, then another pocket of enthusiasm. And that's true, I'll tell you. There's no question about that. Anyone who travels understands that. And I'll tell you something else that I believe because I've seen this, and it may not be correct, but my opinion. Wherever there is a pocket of enthusiasm, there is a strong sponsorship ethic. There are a lot of meetings where there's a lot of noise that masks for enthusiasm and excitement. And when you go back through a year later, and it's an entirely new group manifesting enthusiasm and excitement, you feel something is not structured quite right. I believe that strong sponsorship, at least for people like me, not for most people in A, but for people like me, gave me a way to go. It gave me action. It was the epitome of, again, what has, I've always believed, since I've been sober a while, to understand. The difference between AA and all therapies everywhere, and all therapies in the history of mankind have said this. We were talking about it before the meeting, or some talking to somebody. Nearly every therapy says to disturbed and lost people, come to us, we will change your thinking, and eventually your actions will change. AA, through luck, celestial intervention, whatever it might be, was stumbled upon the greatest gift you and I will ever have. We say, you come to us, we will change your actions, and eventually your thinking will change. Which is why I believe that they say in our book, love is not the magic word. Even spirituality is not the magic word, although these things become essential. Action is the magic word. And action seems to work when all else fails. What it says in our book, it doesn't say, when all else fails, go into a meditative coma. In our book, it doesn't say, give yourself one last hour in front of the mirror, looking at the only one you've ever loved. It says, when all else fails, work with another alcoholic. The greatest gift that anyone you will ever work with will do for you. It's nice if they get a cake, and you can give them a cake and say, yes, I saved that man myself. There's a certain joie de vivre for our French friends. But the greatest gift is this. When I am listening to their crap, I'm not thinking about my crap. The function of sponsorship, I have, again, in pursuit, I think we all are in agreement here, when people are sober a while, I don't think you can hang on to them. And I think that one of the hardest lessons I've had to learn over the years is releasing people little by little. Because, every once in a while, a little group will find a Mr. Christian and charge the quarterdeck. And I'm sick of being put over the side in a spiritual longboat. So you learn little different techniques. But I still believe in the same thing for new people, because the new people I work with are people who are lost. And so sometimes the more lost they are, the more apparently defiant they are. And you must realize this. Newcomers and slippers are not arrogant. They may look arrogant because that is their defense mechanism. But arrogant people are not in that school where you are debating which hurts least, the rope or the river. That is not a mark of arrogance. But what we're dealing with here are people who are afraid, and frightened people keep people at a distance so they won't find out they're afraid. And I did that. I was a master at that for years. That's the closed door. And you got to start with the realization. We find these defiant people and we say, we're going to pull down your ego and make you humble or find some degree of humility. And it's an interesting thought, and it may not be correct, but it's what I believe, is that you don't tear them down to humility, you build them up to humility. As their self-worth increases, their defense mechanism comes down. And eventually what we consider to be getting nice is not getting down tonight, it's getting up tonight. So I can take away, but nobody can maintain it all the time, anybody. That's why we need each other on a continuing basis, I think. But to get that door open, and that's, I think, the same thing that Bill Wilson did in the Cyberling guest house in 1935, is what some of us, maybe I hope all of us, will be doing sometime in the next month. Sitting down with someone who is afraid and desperate, who knows their case is different, who knows there is no hope, and somehow, by sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and saying there is a way, and if you don't feel you can do it, I will show you how to do it. Primarily, I will show you by doing it myself. Secondarily, I will tell you. Telling isn't half as well as doing for it. I know that I never act better than when I'm working with a new guy. I never act better. It's like when I'm teaching my kids to drive. I never drove that safe before or since. Yeah. We have to stop here, son. This says Boulevard Stop. Christ, if he was in that car, I'd have been there by now. Yeah. And that's the way it is with new people. They come down to where I work, and we go across the street to eat. And better stop. The light is turning yellow. I wish if he weren't here, I'd be done with two courses by now. Yeah. But one of the things it does for me is I act better because I want to show them AA works. And I want to explain to them. And I want to do what I'm asking them to do. Now, you can't do everything you ask them to do because you've done a lot of it and you've got other things to do as you get sober longer. But by God, you can show the flag and you can be a presence. I think that one thing that is difficult today, and I don't want to tromp on anybody's toes because last night I made a vow. I'm never going to say another controversial thing in sobriety. But today, a lot of people construe a 12th step call is picking up someone and dumping them off at a treatment center and saying, good luck. That is not a 12-step call. That is a taxi. This in no way implies you shouldn't take people to treatment centers, but there's got to be a deeper connection between you eventually, sooner or later. Because the long-term basis is, I believe, I've never seen it to fail. I've had the opportunity in the past few years of sponsoring people who've been so bad that they've had to come to me. And long-term slippers and, you know, I have a psychiatrist who is more than a body can bear. As soon as he gets straightened out, I'm going to ask him some advice, but not quite yet. And top-notch people who come down in their MGs and Skid Row where I work to say, what will I do about this? And I said, I don't know. How do I get an MG? You know? But the function of the sponsor is to teach the guy to take the actions, not to keep them sober. I agree with no...